You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of gaining at least 10 pounds a week during the month of December. I'm your host, James Marcina, a.k.a. Fettuccine Alfredo Corleone, a.k.a. the Eye Test Impresario, and this is episode 231. On today's show, we're going to talk about the Knicks' putrid loss to the Clown Town Chicago Bulls 92-87 on Wednesday night. We're going to break down what went wrong and why, including but not limited to the lack of offensive cohesion, poor coaching decisions from Jeff Hornacek, Doug McDermott's disappointing debut as a starter. But first, I got one quick update for yous. You may have noticed that we are on our holiday schedule. We will have one more podcast before the new year, and then we will be back to our Monday through Friday schedule. You guys are the best. Thanks for sticking with us. Let's start the show.
Yes!
The 17-16 New York Knicks played the 11-22 Chicago Bulls on Wednesday night, and here's what the situation looked like heading into the game. The Knicks were coming off two losses in a row, including a tough home loss to the annoying-as-hell Embiid-led Sixers on Christmas Day. The Knicks were on the road, where we know they stink so far, but they were at Chicago, who stinks in general. However, the Bulls had been playing very well since Nikola Mirotic came back from getting his face broken, literally broken, by teammate Bobby Portis. They've been 8-2 since his return heading into this game. However, this was the second night of a back-to-back for Chicago. They were on the road the night before where they had beat the Milwaukee Bucks and Giannis Antetokounmpo. However, Breen and Clyde were back. After missing Breen on Xmas dearly, the Knicks were at full strength in the announcing department for this crucial start to a brutal stretch of road games. And best of all, Doug McDermott was getting his first start of the year. I've been clamoring for this for a couple weeks. All right, yes! But you guys know what happened. The Knicks couldn't pull it out, and they lost a truly putrid game, 92-87, to the Clown Town Chicago Bulls, even though broken-faced Wonderboy Nikola Mirotic was held to 4 points by a very game Lance Thomas. So what happened? I'm going to tell you guys what happened, but first I want to talk to fantasy sports fans. Listen up. Did you know that your chances of winning on draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? That's why Draft is my favorite fantasy site. No more getting crushed by the pros. And it's not just me. More than 1 million people have already downloaded Draft too. Playing a real live NBA draft right now. Be done in under 5 minutes and get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit. But you have to use my promo code LONICKS. That's right. Playing a real money draft for free just by using my promo code LONICKS. But it gets even better. Draft is so sure you'll love it that they're even offering Locked On Knicks listeners a money-back guarantee up to $100. How can you go wrong? Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come play free right now with promo code LONICKS. All right, let's talk about what happened in the Knicks' putrid loss to the Clown Town Chicago Bulls. How'd they lose to them? Well, in a pretty all-encompassing nutshell, you could say the Knicks couldn't score for shit. Pardon my Italian. Let's talk about it. There were 23 points for Kristaps Porzingis, 17 for Lee, and 11 for Jarrett Jack, but nobody else scored in double digits for the Knicks. I don't know what the record is for fewest double-digit scorers in a game, but I do know that only three of them is not a sustainable number of double-digit scores. Three Knicks in double digits, and Jared Jack just barely technically qualifies with 11. You know, to put that in perspective, the Bulls played terribly on offense, and they still managed to squeak out four double-digit scores. The Knicks' offense was so bad that the Bulls' high scorer was Chris, I shoot 43% from the field, done, and the Knicks still lost. A huge culprit for Wednesday night's loss, and I hate to say it, was Doug McDermott, Mac, Dougie McBuckets. I've been clamoring for him to start for a while to see what a more, quote, offensively oriented looking starting lineup would do, and he couldn't have been a bigger disappointment in this specific game. All right, I'm not saying Doug McDermott's an irredeemable piece of trash, but in this specific game, he was. I don't mean to be that mean, but you feel me. You know what I'm saying? In 37 minutes, Doug McDermott scored 3 points. 37 minutes, 3 points. The only player who played more minutes than him was Kristaps Porzingis. 3 points, not going to get dummies. He was 1-for-6 from the field. Only made one shot all night. He was 0-for-3 from three, and all of them were gradations of wide effing open. I mean, he had good looks from three, did not hit any one of them. He finally got to the line in the fourth quarter for his first trip there of the game, and he missed the first shot before making the second. I mean, part of this was the Knicks' scheme and execution, because he didn't sniff the ball for large portions of being out there. And I think in general, the Knicks' offense, we're going to talk about that in a little bit more, the generality of the Knicks' stink bomb last night. But there was no cohesion. They weren't moving well as a team. I like to talk about this, watching them kind of as a organism. Just watch the jerseys. Don't even look at who it is. And if you watch the jerseys move into and out, they should be like a beautiful flock of birds. You know, I don't know if it's carrier pigeons or whatever, when they kind of they know what they're doing. Or like a school of fish, right? That swims together. They kind of, they'll move tight and then they'll spread out, but they do it in this coordinated, beautiful way. And when an offense is humming, that's what it looks like. Watch it, if you dare, the replay of this game. And there was no beauty or coordination to the offense. Doug didn't get the ball enough. But when called upon, he did not deliver. And you can't live with that in any game, even against the Bulls. You're starting small forward has to get you more than 3 points, especially if he's playing 37 minutes. If he's playing like garbage and Jeff Hornacek yanks him and he plays 10 minutes, fine, he gets you 3 points. 37 minutes, 3 points, not going to get it done. Also culpable, Enes Kanter, I love you, but your starting center has to get you more than 4 points. He had 4 points on the game. He went up against a big body, and once a Nick, always a Nick, Robin Lopez, and unfortunately, he was a little bit neutralized by that big body. Enes relies on his size a lot. When he faces another guy that's got size, it can become problematic for them. Oftentimes, the Knicks have this advantage with Enes Kanter because teams do play so much smaller than they used to. But against Robin Lopez, who's fine, totally serviceable. I like him. The Knicks should have never traded him. But against a guy like that, he can struggle, and he did. But back to Doug for a second. He's just not as good on the road. I'm tempted to say he turns into, I don't know, a zombie shit monster, but that feels a bit harsh, and I think I'm still emotional from this loss. So instead, I'll just give you some numbers, and we'll talk about it that way, all right? I thought he'd actually have a huge three-point disparity between home and road, but it's actually about equal. He's 42.2% from beyond the arc at home, 40% on the road. Not that much of a difference. His field goal percentage, though, is where we really start to see this effect of home versus road. He's 51.7% from the field at home overall, threes and twos. And he's 40.2% on the road. I'll say that one more time. 51.7% at home, that's what he's shooting, just regular field goal percentage. 40.2% on the road. It's 11.5 percentage points difference home and road. Let's combine the three-point shooting and the two-point shooting for effective field goal percentage. We think that's more accurate. We like to use that on Locked On Knicks. We like to give you guys the accurate picture. He's shooting 60.9% at home. Pretty good. Effective field goal percentage. 47.1% on the road. What's going on? Free throw percentage. Let's look at that. 82.4% at home. That should be pretty static. A lot of like the Knicks home road splits, the whole team plays so poorly on the road. It's hard to separate the noise of that from like the individual performance. But I think when you look at like 3-point shooting, when you look at free throw shooting, that really shouldn't come into play. Doug McDermott, free throw shooting from the charity stripe. 82.4% at home. 58.3% on the road. He was -7 on the night against Chicago. The only Knick with a lower plus minus was Courtney Lee, who was one of the only Knicks to score in double digits. Courtney Lee was -10, so that's a problem. One of three guys to score in double digits as your lowest plus minus. Things aren't going to work out well for you. Funny I should mention both of these guys, but they were also part of one of the most infuriating plays of the night. Late in the second half, the Knicks are on D. A rebound ricochets out toward the top of the arc. Both Lee and McDermott could have grabbed it easily. No Bulls were near them. Both of them deferred to each other. Neither of them reached for it. They were like, oh, after you. No, after you. One of those annoying things where, like, you're with your in-laws at a restaurant and no one wants to order first. Like, someone just order first. Just fucking order. You know what I mean? So then a Bull swooped in while they were fighting over who should order first. I forget who, but a Bull swooped in, passed to Lauri Markkanen. He canned a three. And it was just part of a frustrating sequence where the Knicks squandered a 14-point lead and were only up three at the half. Clyde and Breed said it, but it was sort of like the Knicks gave up with like 3 minutes left because they were sunning the Bulls fairly easily in the first half I'm talking about. And I've talked about this. Ending quarters and halves well is extremely important, psychologically, especially when you're on the road and you don't want to get the home crowd into it. So the Knicks were up 14 at one point in the first half. They kind of took their foot off the gas offensively. They gave up a bunch of wide open threes. They gave the Bulls a lot of confidence heading into the half. I know it's difficult to hold leads in 2017, especially if you're the Knicks and your opponent shoots twice as many threes as you, but everyone's shooting threes, right? You can come back from a big lead quickly. It doesn't mean as much as it used to. You shouldn't be embarrassed and disgraced if you give up a 10-point lead. But it's especially painful when it closes a quarter or a half and you don't have a chance to recover, and then you go into the locker room feeling like ass. But back to Doug McDermott for a second. He's doing this road-home stuff on almost identical usage rates. So it's not like they're randomly asking him to do more on the road or something. He's finishing possessions at about the same rate, home and the road, which begs the question, why is this happening? I mean, I think you've got all the usual culprits of not sleeping at home, a different arena, different rims, different sight lines. You know, in this particular game, he was back where he started and maybe jacked up a little bit, blah, blah, blah. But you got to do better than that eventually. I mean, that kind of excuse, he's not that young anymore. He's 25, you know, like, he's old young. He's got to start, like, not freaking out on the road. I don't know why he's shooting 50-whatever percent from the free throw line. It's crazy. You know, it's one thing if the whole team struggles to execute and keep their poise, but you can't miss wide open threes. Although I guess last night was an aberration for him based on the numbers we looked at. Though it feels like he's had a lot of these nights. I bet if I had time and I went back into the game logs, he'd have a bunch of really bad three-point shooting nights on the road like he did last night. And then he'd have a couple where he went like 7-for-7 to bring his overall numbers back up. I'll look into that for you guys, I promise you. But he's got to hit his free throws. I don't know what's going on with him. I keep saying the team as a whole is going to get better on the road, and I do still believe that. And they are still missing, you know, Tim Hardaway Jr., and there's a bunch of other stuff going on, but Doug's got to clean that up. He's got to clean that up. He's a part of the problem there. It is not just Doug's fault, and I want to talk about that in just a moment, but first, I want to remind you guys, you're listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. There is a podcast for every team in the NBA and the NFL. If you like the Knicks and you like football, I know you like the Giants. Check out Locked On Giants. It's a wonderful podcast. Once again, that's Locked On Giants. So like I said, it's not just Doug, though. I'm picking on him because I'm disappointed. You know, like a good parent. I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed. And I've wanted him to get, you know, a shot to start, and he finally got it, and he just pooped all over the floor, smeared it all around. But the Knicks as a whole all played like absolute doo-doo butter on offense. 43.3% effective field goal shooting. That is 9th percentile for all games played. Very bad. They shot terribly. 87 points per 100 possessions. That was the rate at which they scored on Wednesday night. That's fourth percentile for all games played. Epically bad offense. Part of that was no aggression. No aggression on the offensive end. They had 10 foul shots made per 100 field goal attempts, which is 8th percentile, not getting to the line. And when you watch these games, you can see why. You can see so many wide open lanes for a point guard. Any point guard who can finish in the lane, but they don't have someone with that ability. Jarrett Jack does his best, and he was aggressive last night. I liked his play, but he's 107 years old. Let's talk about Jarrett Jack, though. He had 8 first-half points and 5 first-half assists in 14 minutes. That's a pretty good rate. But then he only played 5 second-half minutes. He had 3 assists and 3 points in those 5 minutes. I think he should have gotten more time in this one. The Knicks' offense got worse as the game went on, and they needed his facilitation, I think. They had 28 points in the first quarter, 24 points in the second quarter, 21 points in the third quarter, 14 points in the fourth quarter. When your team gets worse and worse as the game goes on, that's at least partially on the coach. You're not finding ways to help your players succeed. I'm all for Frankie getting minutes, but they needed this win against the Bulls on the road desperately. I'm not saying that he's the problem. Frank was not like the problem. I just think Jack should have been out there more when it was so clear that they were struggling so mightily on offense, and it just kept getting worse every period as he got less minutes. And Jarrett Jack is not a strong defender. We know this, but defense was not the problem in this one. The Knicks gave up 92.9 points per 100 possessions, which is 10th percentile on offense for the Bulls. 90th percentile for the Knicks, if my math is right. Beep, boop, beep, boop, 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 carry the one. The Knicks allowed the Bulls to shoot 47.1% effective field goal percentage that combines twos and threes, and that's 47th percentile. So a little less than average, not great. That's a winnable percentage. And I think the coaching was bad in this one. I've given Jeff a lot of shit in the beginning of the season, then a lot of credit. I think this was not his best night. It doesn't mean he's terrible and needs to be fired. I think it was a bad night for Jeff. I think the late game play calling was awful. The game was tied at 86 with about 50 seconds to go. And this play, I don't have any hair left. I ripped it all out. Eyebrows, other places that I won't mention. This is a family podcast. So the Knicks, they're tied with the Bulls, 86 with about 50 seconds to go, like I said. They run a play that starts with no off-ball movement. They're just all standing there until 8 seconds are left in the shot clock. Frank gets the ball to KP, like, way too far from the basket in the high post. It's, like, right underneath the three-point arc, basically. They do a half-ass dribble handoff, like, bootleg, weak screen from Chris Daps to Lee, who takes, like, a fadeaway, longest two possible, two guys on him, clang, they miss. Hated that play call. Down 3 with 7.8 seconds left. I didn't think I could hit a play call more than that one, but this one outdid it by a lot. The Knicks are inbounding the ball at half court, basically, you know, in their offensive side of the court. Once again, they're down 3, 7.8 seconds left. Michael Beasley is inbounding the ball for some reason after getting called on a 5-second violation late in the game against Philly on Christmas. Why is he inbounding the ball again? 1 5-second violation is enough for me. I don't know. Maybe you want to get that stink out of him, but don't love that call. And then, sure enough, he gets another 5-second violation. The refs didn't call it, mercifully, but if you watch it, he held it for 5 seconds. He throws it to Enes Kanter, who should not be in the game at this point, and Enes Kanter takes a 3 at the top of the arc. How did this happen? Well, we watched the play a couple times. For one, Courtney Lee is as far away as possible in the opposite corner. Their best three-point shooter. He's in the opposite corner. No one's trying to spring him with a pick. Chris Stapps ran like straight at Beasley, who can't get it to him because there's no deception at all. So that didn't work. And then the only action is Doug screening Kanter at the top of the three-point line. And, you know, Jeff Hornacek said it was designed for Kanter to screen Doug. But if you've got Kanter and Doug at the top of the three-point line, aren't you going to cheat and make sure that Doug can't get it and leave Kanter open and live with what happens? Yeah, of course you are. Why not have Courtney Lee screen Doug McDermott there? Have two guys who are a huge threat to shoot the three. I didn't understand it at all. So I hated that. That was another terrible late game play call. The Knicks didn't look sharp in execution. It's always on the players too. Like, you can't absolve them, but they weren't prepared for that. It's partially on the coaches, and I didn't like the call. This next point goes on both Hornacek and KP's ledger, but KP was doing his annoying, like, all game he was doing this, and it got worse as the game went on. I'm going to go at you because I think you're a little B. That thing he learned from Melo that we've talked about before. To put on my Vinny from Rego Park hat. You know, I don't, whatever, you know. Do I know that he learned this from Melo and not himself? No, but I like to joke, you know. But every time Markkanen, here's the guy who I think, you know, Crispy hates. Every time Markkanen was on him, he tried to shoot it over him, and Markkanen, give him credit, was playing very well. He played good defense. And that kind of thing should get better as the game goes on, not worse. Like, you should maybe be forcing it early in the game, and then your coach is like, chill out. Instead of, like, the reverse, KP was good in the beginning of the game, and he got worse as the game went on. I mean, I get it, right? Like, he wants to show up Laurie. There were rumors that Phil was going to trade Chris Stapps and then replace him with Laurie Markkanen. His face is also hateable. Like, he looks like his name should be Winston, and his dad should be a district attorney. And Winston would, like, constantly mention his dad being a district attorney and be a little dick about it because he knows daddy's going to get him out of trouble with the law. But you got to tighten that up, KP. Chill out. Use your teammates. Pass it around. And, you know, and he was their best offensive player last night. But he forced things. You know, I can't get on him too much because no one else is making a shot at all. But he didn't play so hot either. 23 points on 22 shots. Not good efficiency. Struggled from downtown as well. 1 from 6. The one make being that long Steph Curry 3 we talked about. Courtney Lee forced things too. He was only 7 of 18 from the field. 17 points on 18 shots is yikes, not good. The only guys who shot well were the aforementioned Jarrett Jack. He was 5 of 8 from the field. And Kyle O'Quinn, who was 4 of 5. Those guys got 19 minutes and 16 minutes respectively. 19 for Jack, 16 for O'Quinn. I would have liked to have seen more from them on a night when everyone was so awful from the field. Kyle O'Quinn, by the way, was also the Knicks' highest plus-minus at +9. I got one last coaching gripe. I don't like players playing entire quarters. I know other coaches do this too to a degree, but Jeff does it a lot, I feel like. This is eye test impresario stuff because I don't have the stats to back me up. But I think it takes a lot out of these guys. It makes them worse down the stretch when they play full quarters at a time. That's a lot. Working in reverse, Frank and Doug played the entire fourth quarter. Neither played well in the fourth quarter. Frank was 1 for 6 in the period. He frequently will struggle but kind of be a fourth quarter assassin, and that was not the case. Courtney Lee was 1 for 4 in the fourth. He played 6 minutes in the fourth after playing the entire third quarter. Lance Thomas played 11 minutes in the second quarter, so almost the whole second quarter. Chris Stapps and Courtney Lee, once again, played all 12 minutes of the first quarter. So Courtney Lee had two stretches of playing 12 minutes straight. Maybe he wouldn't be 1 for 4 in the fourth if he didn't have two stretches of 12 minutes without rest. I know there's like timeouts and commercials and stuff, but that's a lot. Lee had two 12-minute uninterrupted stretches. I think that hurts you. I don't like it. So I've been, whining a lot, to put it mildly, in this podcast about all the bad things that happened, about the poor offensive execution. Did anything good happen? We can find some good, right? All right, let's take a look. Let's talk about Chris Stapps. He had a ferocious fast break slam in the first quarter. The kind of monster rim rattler that he would have routinely missed earlier in his career. It's nice to see him put the hammer down there. He also hit a super deep Steph Curry 3 in the first, which the stat keepers listed at 25 feet, but was absolutely much farther away than 25 feet. Like I said, the Knicks played good defense, good team defense with nice rotations and closeouts. For the most part, a couple breakdowns, which weren't great, but for the most part, they did a good job against the Bulls. But the Bulls are terrible, so I'm not going to fall all over myself giving them too much credit there. Still, nice to see, right? Frank had a couple nice moments. He swatted the shit out of Chris Dunn on a drive late in the fourth quarter when the Knicks were up 86-83. So clutch D in a big spot, always nice to see from the young guy, or any guy. Old guys, feel free to play D2. It would be nice. And he also had a fast break crossover and one layup with the left hand. That was nice to see. A little bit of aggression from him, though. He did miss the foul shot on this night. Of course he did. And last but not least, in the positives column, our delightful announcing duo is back in full strength. Mike Breen, Walt Clyde Frazier. Breen mentioned how cold it was in Chicago about 100 times. So he must be a warm weather guy, which makes me like him even more than I already did, which I didn't think was possible, because I too hate winter. Summer all the way for me. Come on. Winter's unnatural. You gotta bundle up. You gotta put all this. You gotta put on like a space suit, like a hazmat suit, to go outside and survive. Summer is natural. You strip down. You get naked to your natural state, and then you're comfy. I miss summer. I gotta move somewhere warm. I love New York, but whew, I hate the cold. However, the cold in Chicago led to a couple of delightful tidbits from Clyde, or about Clyde. You know, we learned a little bit about Clyde here. Apparently, he showed up to the arena without a coat, even though it was 0 degrees, they said many times. And he said it was because he doesn't go out. He's like, I go from the plane, to the bus, to the arena, to the hotel. He said he spends a couple of seconds outside, but when he does it, he finds it invigorating. So the few, like, seconds he's out in that 0 degree weather, in between, you know, being chauffeured around on private jets and whatnot, he gets invigorated by the cold. It's like he's in a sauna or something. He's going into the cold tub after getting out of the steam room. So shouts to Clyde for that. We got a fun Clydeism from Breen in this one. Beasley was playing well for a small stretch, and Breen said, Beasley scoring easily, so I like that. And then Clyde asked Breen an impromptu trivia question. I forget what it was. He was like, what Knicks have averaged 3.5 offensive rebounds? I think that's what it was. And Breen, I don't think it was on the schedule. He almost seemed a little bit annoyed. Like, how dare you hit me with this pop quiz and make a fool out of me? And he started doing like a little mock announcer shtick. And he was like, tonight's Clyde trivia question brought to you by... And he paused for a split second. And then Clyde swooped in marvelously with Clyde's wine and dine. And Breen started cracking up. So, love every time Clyde gets a Clyde's wine and dine thrown in there. But let's wrap up this pod, right? That was a brutal one. And they're going to regret it down the line if they don't make the playoffs. I am, especially. And it was especially brutal to sit through because, once again, Chicago is trash. And it feels like your team should be up by 4,000 points after every possession. So every time you look at the scoreboard and they're not up by 4,000, you're like, oh, what's going on? Why? This team stinks. And the Knicks are now back to 500. You know, not the end of the world. I don't know if they were feeling themselves after that 4-game road win streak. You know, it saw a couple of satisfying sunnings against Oklahoma City and Boston. But they should be back to absolutely not feeling themselves now. And they need to not feel themselves because they got a rough schedule with 2 of their next 3 against the Spurs, sandwiched around a game at New Orleans, which should be winnable, but they might have trouble with New Orleans' size. We'll see if Cantor is, you know, negated again by another big front line. They've got Boogie and Davis over there. Then they play the Wizards, which is tough. But then they play the Heat, the Mavs, the Bulls. So still, they can do some things. But they put themselves in an unnecessary hole with this one. A lot of people have been asking me, should the Knicks tank now? No. They shouldn't. And it's kind of what I've been saying all along. They just need to do what they do. I know it's like the stupidest sounding thing I've ever said, but like, they shouldn't be sitting healthy players. Like, that's garbage. You know, if they lose 10 of their next 12, yeah, maybe give Willie some more burn. Maybe Billy. Willie Billy Curse Jar. You know, maybe look to trade Kyle more aggressively, that sort of thing. But they should absolutely not be, like, phantom injuries tanking. I think what I'm trying to say is it's going to sort itself out. They should play to win. And if they play well, Timmy comes back, they make the playoffs, great. If they don't, wherever they fall in the draft, let the karma gods decide. Do the right thing. Try to win. Don't be stupid with win-now trade moves. I'm not saying that. But develop the guys as best you can. Try to win and just see what happens, and things will work out. It'll be fine. You know, all that being said, hashtag that being said, the Knicks, they still, you know, this is what we've been talking about. They look like a 500-ish team still. This was a worse loss than most, and I'm bitter as hell about it. But, you know, did you expect them to beat Boston? Did you expect them to beat Oklahoma City? I don't know, maybe you did, maybe you didn't. But these kind of things have a way of evening out with a team like this. The Knicks will be fine long-term. They're still set up well for the future. But, you know, I was pissed about this one, so I had to get some bile out of me. So thank you guys for playing along. Thank you guys for listening. That's it for me. If you like what you hear, take a second to rate us on iTunes. Give us a one-sentence review. Say I have an angelic voice. That kind of thing goes a long way. Follow us on Twitter, LockedOnKnicks. You can follow me personally, NBA Injury Report. I want you guys to be chill to each other. And join us one more time this week for another episode of Locked On Knicks before we get back to our days a week schedule. All right, that's it. Peace. Sweet.